Hello, everybody. I'm Claudia Kallerman. I'm a lecturer here at the Museum of Modern Art. Have a PhD in art history. My specialty is 20th century Latin American art and contemporary art. What else? I teach here the evening classes, and I think that's really great for you. When I was preparing this lecture, I thought about that it's very kind of timely because we have the Reverend show upstairs. I don't know if you've seen it, but the Reverend brings a different view of Latin American art. And I think what you're going to be seeing today also brings a very different view from what we are, from what we assume to be Latin American art, like coming from the Mexican muralists or Frida Kahlo or surrealists. So we're going to see this other side that it's being more and more, on view. There is a major exhibition now opening tomorrow in the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston on geometric abstraction, and that's, things that we're going to be talking about today. Also, there's a show there on Elio Gisica. That's someone I'm going to talk about today. So there is a lot going on now, more into that kind of art that we're going to be looking at today. But still, it's not really what we associate with the idea of Latin American art. So I hope you're going to enjoy and see something different here today. The other thing that I wanted to tell is that the title of this talk, it's so big, it is really the concrete and the neo-concrete movements, Argentina, Brazil, and Venezuela. So, of course, we're going to do like major issues and major ideas that were part of these two movements in these three countries. It's a lot to cover in 45 minutes, but I'll do the best that I can. Why did I choose Argentina, Brazil, and Venezuela? Because there is a very close sensibility from these three countries, very much in art that we can say more conceptually oriented than really this idea of looking for roots, looking for identity. That's not really something that we are going to be looking today. One of the reasons you can ask me why. Why is it different from Mexico, from Peru, from other places? Because there's no pre-Columbian past in these countries in the same way that there was, for instance, in Mexico or in Peru. There's no Mayans, Incas, or Aztecs in Brazil, Venezuela, and Argentina. There's no empires, no temples. So there's not really that strong pre-Columbian past. So I think that's one of the reasons why that kind of search for identity is not that strong in those places. There are other reasons, and maybe we'll talk about them during the lecture or maybe later when the questions come. So really what I wanted to share with you today, it is this interest in the 40s, 50s, and 60s from artists from Brazil, Argentina, and Venezuela, really to be in touch with the international movements. Really what we're going to be seeing are artists talking about art. Artists very interested in being part of what is going on in France, in Italy, and other places in Europe where a lot of these artists lived for different times in their lives. The whole idea, what is a painting, what is a sculpture, kind of breaking up with the idea of traditional media, trying to bring art to another level, but very much into the formal discussion of what art is about. So it's not really about, again, identity, the indigenous roots, the indigenous past, or surrealism being the weird, the strange things that happen and could happen in Latin America and things like that. So just really to start, we are seeing here Arturo magazine that was a magazine published in Argentina in Buenos Aires, and there was only one issue of this magazine, but it's extremely important because really this was really the launching of these ideas of geometric abstraction that we're going to be seeing today by two major groups working in Argentina in the 40s and 50s, the Madi group and the Concreto Invención. So there were two groups with very like little different agendas, like splitting hair in the way we can say that, but very much focus and interest in this idea of a geometric abstraction. So you see here the cover, this role, this idea of moving into abstraction, as you can see there. Another work by Tomás Maldonado that really starts telling us about the things that we're going to be seeing here today is the development of the triangle. Again, using geometric abstract shapes coming from the Russian constructivists, coming from someone like Malevich, coming from Eluzitsky, having that kind of legacy, but now trying to make this into moving into the space. So we're going to start seeing that there will be a lot of interest from artists to see how can we do things moving space in the space that not necessarily move. This is still a canvas. This is oil on canvas. This is a painting. How are we going to make these shapes move in space? And we're going to see how much far we're going from this. But now you see that it is kind of moving out of the canvas. There is this kind of diagonal that shows us the idea of movement, of moving forward, of moving upward. And again, the triangles that are this emphasis on geometry, on mathematics, on the rational, on the conceptual, something that was really created in the brain, but not really copying or looking at reality. We start going to see pieces there, they can move. So you see that these are wooden pieces. This is oil on wood, but this is very much like movable parts of a sculpture. And again, is this a sculpture or is this a painting? It's on the wall, so it is a painting, but has this three-dimensional kind of aspect to it because it is an object too. So this discussion, is this a painting, is this a sculpture, of course, is something that someone like Robert Rauschenberg is also discussing here in the US. So that's what I'm trying to tell you. It's very much part of what is going on in the world at the time, very much then really related to the Venezuelan roots, if we can talk in those terms. So these are movable hinges, kind of parts that can move in space and can be transformed or be changed depending on how you put them or how you touch them. So they can change a little bit, but not too much yet, as we're going to see later on. Also, another major idea that the Argentinian artists were discussing, were very interested, is the idea of the frame. How do we create a surface that doesn't really give you the three-dimensional space? Very much like what the modernist artists were thinking about. How do we break with the idea of perspective, with the idea of the Renaissance, the window into the world? Art in the 20th century is no longer a window into the world, but it's very much reaffirming the flatness of the canvas. But when you have a background, when you have a canvas and you have a composition on a canvas, you still have very much what is called the foreground and the background. How do you break these things? How do you make the background and the foreground kind of collapse into each other and become just one? And that's another major question that these artists were thinking about. You see that the white there is really the white is the piece of paper where this was shot, this image was shot, but also it's the wall. So again, even if you eliminate the canvas, if you do those shaped canvas like Frank Stella, for instance, was doing here in the US, right? And I see a lot of you agreeing, so you know the black paintings by Frank Stella, that's about structure. And here again, it is an emphasis on structure, on form. So even when you do that, if you put this on the wall becomes the canvas. So the wall becomes the background of the object that is on top of it. So we're going to see how this is also going to move away, but we see artists started to be thinking about these issues. How do we eliminate the background? And one of the way of doing that is creating the shaped canvas where everything is kind of inside the shape and there's no really the borders or the edges to be thinking about or to be concerned about. So this is also from the Mahdi group, and you see there the shaped painting. And again, it has a shaped, is a painting, but it's also, you know, the painting is just the painting and the frame. They are together. The white is really the background where they are shot, where the picture was taken. So there's no white in the background. The piece is the shaped canvas itself. So this is very much what the Argentinian contribution at this time was about in the late 40s, early 50s. And also, of course, Cosici, who is a very important artist from Argentina, and who is one of the pioneers of neon. Neon art, an art made out of light. And what is painting? Again, when we think about painting, painting is about light. But what they're doing, and composition, of course, sometimes, but they are eliminating, in many ways, the composition and emphasizing the formal aspects of painting itself, and also engaging industrial materials. So that's something else that it's very important here, the plexiglass, the wood. We're going to see a lot of the neon or the industrial paint. There is this emphasis on industrial materials, very much like the minimalist here, but it's a different discussion from the minimalist. But you can think in those terms, like using materials that are about maybe the modernization of Venezuela or Argentina or Brazil, the industrialization, emphasizing that aspect of modernity instead of emphasizing an agrarian past from the pre-Columbian past, as we see in the Mexicans' muralists and other works by Latin American art at the same time. So it's really emphasizing the present, the now, and the future in many ways. And a way to do this is to engage these new kinds of materials. And we'll talk more about that as we move along. So going to Venezuela, we have here Alejandro Otero, and we have this work upstairs. So after the lecture, if you'd like to go to the fourth floor, you're going to see a piece by Otero. These are three different paintings by Otero. So there are three here, color rhythms number 28, 39, and 40. Again, the titles are very much like abstract, it's like untitled, almost something like that, because it doesn't refer to the world, to the world outside the painting. It refers to the painting itself. It's about color and it's about rhythm, and that's what is the title, Color Rhythm, as you see there. Of course, he is someone who is engaged in talking with Mondrian, right? If you know Mondrian, you know that that's where he's coming from. So there is this dialogue with artists, with Russian constructivists, and with neoplasticism, with Till van Doesburg, with Mondrian, later on Max Beal. So artists coming out of that idea of geometric abstraction. What is the task here? The task here is to make Mondrian move, to make those, all the research that Mondrian did into the purity of art, and that's what Mondrian was looking at. What is the purity in art? What is the universal language of art? To use the same kind of language, basically the primary colors plus the black and the white, but now you create images that seem like they're moving in space by the way that he uses repetition. It's a white background and it's black stripes repeated over and over again, the vertical black stripes, and on top of those black stripes, Otero is going to use, he's going to glue some cardboard, colored cardboards that he paints with enamel. Again, industrial paint. And the way that he uses those different colors, these different cardboards glued on the background, moving to different directions, give you a sense of movement into the composition that he is creating there. So it's very much this idea of optical art, of kinetic art, and the Venezuelans, the movement was called the kinetic art movement, really meaning or bringing this idea of a movement, of rhythm, of vibration, that's another good word here, into compositions like Mondrian that you also can look at upstairs, and you're going to see how Mondrian is still very static, and he's trying to give some movement to his work with Broadway Boogie Woogie, which is one of the last works that he did, and it's one of the highlights here at MoMA, but that is bringing it to the next level in a way. We have here also Carlos Cruz Diaz from Venezuela using the physichromy, again talking about color, the physical qualities of color. That's what he is very interested in, using painted cardboards, really gluing the cardboards into a box, a wooden box or an acrylic box, and the way that the stripes are hanging from the borders of the box, they make this idea of movement, and I think this is a better one for you to see how the different sizes, but also the different colors of the stripes, they create this idea that things are moving in space, even if they're not. Again, this is a surface. This is really a flat surface. There is a relief here with those stripes of cardboard coming out of it. So again, this idea, is it a painting? Is it a sculpture? Is it an object? What is it really about? But also the idea of creating this piece that is moving in space, but how do you create this optical trick on the eye? Through the idea of repetition, using seriality, using repetition, using this mathematical kind of ratio between one stripe from the other and things like that. So that's really the investigation. It's a very kind of perceptual kind of investigation, of course, coming out of phenomenology. So we have here Soto, Jesus Rafael Soto, also from Venezuela, and you see here the spiral was red, made again out of plexiglass. They use a lot of plexiglass, wood, enamel, not oil anymore, but those kind of industrial paints. And the idea, like a Bridget Riley, if you wish, or something like that. So you see the repetition and the movement and the circle and the idea of rhythm. And Soto was a musician, very interested in jazz. He played the guitar. So there is also this idea of bringing music, bringing the rhythm, bringing those ideas out of music, putting together music and painting, which of course was also one of the main interests of Mondrian when he did his mature work in the 30s. So there's also that connection going on right there, the idea of vibration. This is a Soto, and what Soto is going to be doing, which is very interesting, and the slide, of course, is not the best one, but what you have here, it's really stripes in the background, again, repetition. Usually he uses either a black background or a gray background, where you have the repeated stripes over and over again. And on top of it, he's going to use real rods made out of metal. So there is a three-dimensional kind of aspect here. But instead of going into the painting, creating the illusion of the three-dimensional space, going inside, it's coming out into our space, the space of the viewer. So you see here a major shift in terms of creating illusion of space. And these are real rods that he puts on top or in front of the stripes in the background. So when you look at that, it really gives you this idea that things are moving in the space, though they are not moving the space. So again, it's a trick on the eye. And I think this is a fabulous fabulous one for you to understand what I'm saying, where he really does the black lines, again, repetition, music, mathematics, and all of that, black lines repeated, painted, repeated, 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 and then the wire on top of it, creating this kind of drawing in the space. So he's creating a drawing space with the wire. He's creating a kind of a calligraphy there, a writing, as you see there, just really with wire. And if you have seen these works, and I think you have to be in the presence of them, you really have the sense that things are moving up in space. So there is a very famous statement by Paul Klee where he said that he wanted to make the invisible visible, which is a very famous quote by Paul Klee. And I think here it's really kind of the opposite. It's making the visible invisible. So there is this idea of the dematerialization of the work of art. It's very much made out of wood, stainless, steel wires, nylon. So you have all these elements, but when you see it, it looks like it is moving into the space and you don't know exactly where is it coming from. So it looks like it's almost like effacing into your eyes this kind of space. So this work is upstairs, and you can see this upstairs. And you know, the last brown bag that we have here, someone was asking me, like, if the works were big or they were small, and he did them in big sizes, like large sizes, and usually you can see them in auctions. Sotheby's, Christie's, usually they carry the big works by Soto, and it's fascinating to see them. Or also, they are just done into small, you know, surfaces, like you have here, the log, which is a very famous work by him, and there is upstairs, also on the fourth floor, so I encourage you to go. And he said that he wanted to create this same kind of visual effect in a large piece or into the small piece. Both of them, according to him, would carry this effect of changing the perception and this very rational kind of art that someone like Soto is creating here. When we go to Brazil, we are going to see that the first São Paulo Biennial in 1951 also favored this idea of geometric abstraction. You see on the poster of that biennial the lines, the very geometric lines, the very geometric background. So you see that that's also a language that is going to be favored by artists in Brazil in the 50s. The first biennial in São Paulo, who won the first prize, the first sculpture prize, was Max Biel. And Max Biel was really the artist that continued this idea of geometric abstraction in Europe after the Second World War. Mondrian died in 1944. You know, that's very much, you know, the end of the beginning of this movement of geometric abstraction. But after 1944, he created a school of Ulm in Germany, like continuing the teachings of Mondrian, of Theo van Doesburg, and other major figures from this neoplasticist movement that, of course, started in Holland, you know, in the 30s, in the 20s and 30s with Mondrian and Theo van Doesburg. And the term concrete art, it's coming out of a magazine founded by Theo van Doesburg in 1930. And what is the term concrete art means? This is really about abstraction, but these artists, they saw that when we talk about abstraction, we're talking about the real. We're abstracting from the real. You're still looking at the flower and then you're abstracting out of that. You're still looking at a facade of a church or something like that and then creating the abstraction out of that. They thought that concrete will not have any ties with reality. It's really an art created by the mind. It's a very conceptual kind of art they wanted to create into those mathematical rules, mathematical forms, rational forms, but starting in the mind. And that's the difference between abstraction, the term abstraction, and the term concrete art that we are engaging here today. Though you can see Venice Venezuela had a name, Kinetic Art. In Argentina, we had the Madi Group or, you know, Concreto Invención. So there are different kinds of names that we talk about these movements. But I think concrete is a good one that englobe all of this idea of creating a geometric abstract art that starts in the mind. It's generated by the mind. So you have, this was the work that, you know, work that he won the first São Paulo Biennial with the Mobius strip, and you see divided in three different parts, and he got the prize. So he was a major influence. That's not someone that we hear so much here in the U.S., Max Bill, but very important figure in Latin American art, especially after this first São Paulo Biennial that he won the prize. Another way of looking at the concrete art is really looking at poetry. So it's not just something that is in the visual arts, but also there was poetry related to that term. And the poetry, it's not a poetry of meaning. It's not a poetry that it's interested in creating a narrative. It's really a poetry about the visualization of words in the space, the repetition of the words. And you see there the word crystal, the word fome, meaning hunger, you know, hunger of form. So fome de forma. So you see that it's all repeated, the words. And the way you read those words, they create a rhythm. Again, rhythm, movement, you know, a kind of a vibration, not so much into your eyes, but also in your ears. And that's very much what this poetry was about, and we call them ideograms. We have here, you know, the concrete movement out of São Paulo, and you see artists working with forms, the same repeated form, you know, the ends are very different, the way that he colored just the ends, the left side of the painting or of this lozenge or really the top of it. So, and this makes you think that they are different forms, but of course they are the same form repeated in different sizes. So again, this trick with the eyes, it's very much important here. And this is a fabulous work, I think, called Visible Idea, that you know, and you see Cuban artists doing works there. There is Carmen Herrera, that we have some works by her here at the Museum of Modern Art. MoMA just bought a few works by her. And again, it is, you know, Cuban artists working in Paris and also working with those geometric abstract ideas, just really creating abstraction and movement with lines. What is there? Lines, nothing else than lines, acrylic on wood. But you see the new kind of perceptual space that someone like Cordero is being able to create for us. So again, creating a new perception of the world, and that's what is the interest here. We have someone like Sergio Camargo, also from Brazil, that is going to be working with reliefs, either wood or marble, white or black. They are small kinds of works too. Is this a painting? Is this a sculpture? It is three-dimensional. So again, where do we put them? Do we put them on the wall? Do we place them in the stand? So how do we talk about those works? But what is beautiful about this is this idea of the tension that is created there with these reliefs going in different directions, the same tension that we can think about Mondrian creating the lines, the vertical and the horizontal lines, you know, on the sides, on the edges of the paintings, the idea of tension. And I have a critic, you know, that called these works like the madness of order, or the order of chaos. And I think this is a wonderful way of talking about these works, because a lot of them is this idea of being so obsessed with creating order and form, but when you see it, so chaotic. So there is this contradiction there of order and chaos very much coming from a lot of these works, also from someone like Soto, when you have the repetition of the lights over and over again, and then the wires, they bring another dimension, creating this kind of madness, disrupting kind of the flux of the world and creating to you a new perception of the work. So What the Huichisica that I'm going, that I told you there is a show of Huichisica now at Houston Museum of Fine Arts that is going to the Tate in London over the summer. So if you have the chance to see, he's an artist to watch out. Very interesting artist, died in 1980, but it's really being revised now, revived in a very strong way, Brazilian artist. And you see that he also started with this very geometric, abstract language. That's where Huichisica started his career as a concrete artist, working the red and white meta schemes, and that's how he calls these works that he did in oil, but also a lot of them he also did in gouache on paper, as you can see here, coming out of that language of creating a new space just made out of line and geometric forms. What Huichisica is going to be thinking is the same things that we talked about in the beginning of the talk with the Madi group, which is how do we make something like this, like a shaped canvas, and we eliminate the background. How can we do something that we make the background not interfere into the sculpture or the painting, whatever you want to call a work like that? And what Huichisica is going to do, which is very interesting, is he's going to create a spatial reliefs where this forms now, and you see how geometric they are, how they're coming out of that, out of the meta schemes, but he's going to start bringing them out of the wall. So they are like mobiles, like Alexander Calder. So that's another major reference that we have here, the Calder, the mobiles. And you have here Huichisica bringing it out of the wall, the reliefs. What you have to look at here, many different things. One, the geometric abstract shape, which is this idea of purity in art, an art that is about art itself. Also, the idea of pure color, they're very monochromatic. He is emphasizing color, the purity of color, and we're going to see where he's going to take this research into many, many different ways. So you see the spatial relief, you see another one here, painted wood, coming out of the wall, hanging out from the ceiling, also monochromatic. Another shot of the spatial relief, and then that's what he does. That's the next step, and this was here at the Museum of Modern Art when the museum reopened until, I think, last month. It was on view on the fourth floor, so it belongs to the Museum of Modern Art, and it's about the box. He calls it Bolide. And this box now has the same color of the spatial relief, and the same color of some of the meta schemes that he did, but now it becomes a box that you can manipulate. You can open or you can close this box. It is an object. And inside this object, we are going to see some pigments that it's something like this, that I'll come back to that, inside the box, and also some nylon, some kinds of materials, kind of cheap materials that were used in the slums of Rio de Janeiro. So you start seeing the shift here from what is called the concrete movement into the neo-concrete movement, the neo-concrete NEO, meaning the return of the concrete, but the return, it's always different, right? It never return as the same, as you know, nothing returns as the same. So you see here that he is coming out of that geometric language, but now he's starting to create objects, objects that can be manipulated by the viewer, objects to be incorporating the participation of the viewer. You're supposed to open and close those boxes. This is another spatial relief that he did again, and now you see it hanging out of the ceiling away from the wall. And that's the next step. The next step is really to do use pigment. And this Bolitti, what he calls it Bolitti, he's going to say that it's about pure energy. That when you deal with painting, when you look in the purity, what is the purity of painting? Well, it's color, it's pigment, it's light. That's what a painting is made out. So he's isolating the pigment, the color. Instead of showing the color on the surface, like you see here, the color on the surface, or here you still have a support for the color. Now the color has no support. It's really put on this glass vase, and it's just about the vital energy, and that's how he is going to call this Bolitti's, the vital energy of life, and that's what you have that. The next step from Uchisika, and this is Uchisika, I just wanted to show you a picture of him, and this is another work that we'll can talk about another time. But you see here that the next step from this, is going to be this. So you see the evolution, the changes, the same thing. This is a geometric abstract cape, but now the cape is being used by somewhere, by someone. And this person is called Nildo from Mangueira. Mangueira is the oldest slum from Rio de Janeiro, and Hélio Uchisika was a dancer in the Mangueira Hill. So he knew those dancers from the Mangueira, from the community. And he has someone like Nildo da Mangueira, a samba dancer, wearing his cape. The parangolé, it's like a slang in Portuguese that is like, would say in English, like, what's up, bro? Something like that. You know, like, what is the parangolé? So what's going on? Something, you know, that would be translated in those terms. So, and he is really saying that these are capes to be used, that they only exist when there is someone, a living creature, using them and dancing with them. So you see the transformation from an object that is purely for you to see. It's really the rational movement that we've been talking about with the concrete art, a movement that is about perception, very much rational, kinetic, but very much rational as well, to something that starts to have its own life, that starts to move in space, and that requires us as the viewer to participate and to be integrated into the work. But you see how, where it is coming from, which is the beauty here. So it's not abandoning that geometric abstract art, but now it's not only favoring the eyes, but favoring other senses of the body, incorporating the body into the work of art. And of course, there's body art here in the U.S. And so many other things that we can start relating here to what these artists are doing at the same time, sometimes even earlier. So you see here the parangolé, the cape, the performance, the happening, the idea of the happenings. There's music, you're dancing with the capes. And if it's just a cape hanging in the hangar, it's not the purpose. There's no purpose, because the purpose is for you to make it into a live object. So you see, and the next thing that he's going to do is to create installation art, really to create spaces where you can walk through, that you have to really experience it with your body. And this is called a penetrable place where you penetrate, called Tropicália. And there was a major show, the Bronx Museum, I don't know if you've seen it, called Tropicália, that just closed last month. And this is really a spaces created by Uchisika, kind of, you know, reminding or in the way inspired by the slums of Rio de Janeiro, where you have pebbles on the floor, earth on the floor, tropical plants, parrots kind of talking and singing, live parrots, and cardboard divisions like you have in the slums, or, you know, like cheap kind of cloths dividing the room. So it's really like an environment that looks like a favela or a slum. And when you look into those environments, when you walk through, at the end, he wrote, I don't know if you can read from there, but he says, purity is a myth. What is the purity that he's referring to? That's the purity. This is the purity. This is pure art. This is the geometric abstraction that we can say coming out of Mondrian and Mondrian's search for the purity in art, that's what he's referring to. This is a myth. It's not possible to do an art that is just pure, that is just about art itself. Now you see how many other levels he's incorporating into the work of art, into the penetrables, where you have to walk. You have to take out your shoes and walk. And this is was at the Bronx Museum here in New York, and you had a space to walk through. And these are two different penetrables that he did at the Whitechapel in London in 1960. And it was reproduced here in the Bronx Museum. Oitocica was very much close to another Brazilian artist, Ligia Clark, and you see here the Mobius strip out of Max Bill. So again, all these references that we've been talking about coming back, you know, the Mobius strip, but now, again, it's not just the object, it is about an elastic band that they create where they put their hands together as just one body together related through the hands. Ligia Clark also is going to start working with geometric abstraction, but what she's going to bring into that kind of language is that these are hinged objects, and we had one here upstairs too on the fourth floor until 2 months ago, I think, and she calls them animals or beasts, and these are living organisms, according to her, things that you should manipulate, that you can use, that you can put in different size, like left and right. You know, it's like every day you wake up and you create a new object out of these sculptures, as you see there. She's someone who's going to be very much disillusioned with art because she thinks art can be commodified, and she's not interested in that, which has to do with a lot of the things that are happening here at the same time, art that is going outside of the walls of the museums. As you know, this was extremely important here in the 70s. And you see that she's going to create body suits where people are going to be touching each other and finding different elements inside the body suits, like elements that are very much related to, you know, sexuality, the male sexuality, the women sexuality. But they are really made out of eggshells. They are made out of plastic, out of cloth. But when you touch each other's body, you start finding those elements inside those body suits, and you see some of the elements. Another thing that she did, another experience that she did when she was teaching at the Sorbonne in France, was working with her students with this elastic band where everybody is kind of connected by this elastic band and everybody's moving in space. And when someone moves, everybody else has to move. So this idea of the interaction, bringing the body, bringing the people into the workshops that she's doing. This is Baba Antropofagica, and you see there this tool, like this thread coming out of the mouth of the students and kind of wrapping the one that is there on the floor. And cannibalism, again, all of these have very much references in the 30s back in Brazil with the Manifesto of Antropofagia by Oswald de Andrade. So there's a reference to modernism in Brazil, but now it is really kind of a postmodern kind of work where you have this idea of cannibalism. But what is interesting here is that the retinal art that we talked about so much here today, now it's what is being denied. There's no more eyes. There's no vision. Look at the vision. Everybody's blindfolded. So the retinal part of it is denied to the viewer or to the participant of these workshops. What is going on is that you are touching the bodies, and inside those body suits, you're going to find different elements, and you have to find what they are through the touch, through the senses, other senses like smell, touch, and other things, not really just the vision. Masks, sensorial masks, masks that don't allow you to see. The eyes are covered, but inside those masks, again, you have materials like Brillo or seashells or eggshells, you know, pieces of cloth and things like that. So you touch them inside and you start feeling what it is inside those masks, but they're not really masks to see, to create a visual kind of language there. She really, at the end of her life, started to really do therapy, very much interested in that kind of therapy, where she thought she could use her art in the way of healing people. And you see, it's an art of the senses. It's a therapy based on the body, on the senses. And that's the healing that she was proposing here. So you see different ways, I mean, how all of this started out of geometric abstraction and kind of ended up in something that is totally different from that kind of pure language that we started talking about. And really the last artist I have to show you here is a Gego from Venezuela, who is also part in the way or the same kind of, generation of the kinetic artist, but now you see what she's doing. She's also using geometric abstraction, but to create drawings in the space. These are like drawings, but look at what she's going to do with the drawings. That's the artist herself creating a spider web, really out of wire. It's called the Reticularia, and it's a major work that she did, an ongoing work that she did from the 60s into the 80s, where she's creating these wires into the space, creating real, look at how wonderful this is, a real installation like the Penetrable of Ochocinco, where you have to walk through, but it's a space all created by wire. So this idea of the dematerialization of the work of art, you know, what you see there, wires creating drawings, wires creating maybe a writing in space, but, with no real support, it's just the wires in the space. So it's like really going into this idea of effacing the art or the void or the nothingness and those kinds of ideas that I think we can relate here. Look how fantastic this is. And I guess that's it. So I'm going to open up for questions if you have any questions. Anybody? No? Did you know this kind of work before? No, it's very new for you, right? I would imagine so, that it's something that... And again, more and more we're going to be looking at those kinds of works because, MoMA really favors also that kind of art from Latin America. And I think there is a lot of discussion now what art from Latin America is, and there is this idea of not doing this in the stereotype way of looking at it only through surrealism, only through the Mexican muralists. So there is there is a major show coming to NYU at the Gray Gallery about geometric abstraction. There are all these shows opening in Houston. There is a kind of a movement in a way to spread more the word about this art from Latin America that we don't know. I mean, how do you know this is a Brazilian artist, this is a Venezuelan artist? You can't, because it doesn't say there. So it's about this universalism in the arts, which of course artists want to participate in that kind of discourse and in that kind of language. Okay, yes?
I just have a question, and it's quite specific. You've covered so much.
Yeah.
And it's kind of overwhelming, but I loved it. But when you were talking about the Clark's work and the eyes being covered,
yeah,
what again was that?
It's that the whole idea of the concrete art. Remember, it's very much a visual art. It's something that it's about the eyes creating a new perception of space, but through the retinal, through the eyes, through the visuals. Like when we talked about even the kinetic artist from Venezuela, it's like playing the trick on the eye where you see the movement where there's no movement because it's really a flat surface. How can that create movement? You can't. It's just the way that you juxtapose lines and you juxtapose different elements into each other. So what she's doing is kind of switching that, saying, now, I'm going to do an art. She's a visual artist, but an art that it's not about just looking, but it's about feeling. It's about the experience of the body, bringing the whole body into the experience of the visual art. And that's the major change here. Yeah?
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? So thank you so much for coming, and I hope you come to another round back. Thank you.